Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my co-host and business partner, Al McDonald. Al, we're heading into fall, and especially out where you are, I'm sure you're enjoying the leaves. Are you still getting out on the bike this time of year?
Fall is in full swing out here. The leaves are already fallen, and I've seen people out raking. But yes, the weather's still great. There's still opportunity to get out on the cycle, hopefully for a few more weeks. So we'll see how it goes, but looking forward to it.
All right. Awesome. Well, be careful out there. And of course, as always, a reminder to our people driving around, always make way for our friendly bicycle friends. So Al, I'm going to say about 9 months ago, I'm on vacation. I'm down south where you know I like to go in Aruba. And I get a call from a friend and he says, you got to meet this person and you got to meet them right away. And generally on vacation, I'm like, I'm not going to hop on a call on vacation. But this friend said, no, I think you really might like him. So I'm in a mall in downtown Aruba. And I hop on this call and I meet Carl Obey, who's joining us today. And I'm sure glad I did because we've had many discussions since and we seem to run into each other quite a bit, Carl, at different events throughout the city. And welcome to the show, first of all. But I do want to do a little bit of a bio because I think you've got a bit of an interesting background. So Carl is a healthcare innovator dedicated to improving patient care and outcomes across Canada. With a track record of building creative solutions and strong stakeholder partnerships, he has led transformative initiatives that deliver both operational excellence and measurable impact. At Optimal U, Carl applies his expertise in leadership, strategy, and execution to bring lifestyle medicine into the mainstream, strengthening public healthcare while helping employers achieve better results for their teams. Carl, thanks for doing this.
My pleasure. Glad to be here, Robin. Thanks.
Yeah, we were able to finally book this. Our schedules didn't seem to align for quite a while, but we kept running into each other at events, and it's always good to see you. And I just love our conversations. And I just thought, like, we got to get one of these recorded because I really love what you're doing and I love the space. I just find it so interesting. So I thought where we'd start, and we have had a conversation with another person in your space. And it's so interesting because I think there's some confusion around how the public system and private system kind of work and kind of integrate. So I thought where we could start with was Optimal U. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is? Because I think that's the first step. But if you could kind of merge that into how do you close the care gap that we're seeing in the public system right now while working alongside, not against the public system? Because I think that's really important to understand.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, thanks, Robin. I guess, first of all, thank you for the warm introduction. It almost sounded like I wrote that myself, which I'm pretty sure I may have at some point in time. So appreciate the intro and thanks again for bringing me on this great platform of yours. Yeah, so this is obviously a huge passion of mine, this area. You know, I've been working on the healthcare side of things for about 25 years now, mostly on the business side, but I've had the privilege of seeing it through a number of different lenses. So I started my career in pharma. I worked in lab diagnostics. I worked in pharmaceutical wholesale, worked in specialty pharmacy, patient reimbursement. So there's a number of different places that I've kind of had a quick look at how the healthcare system operates. And the long and short of it is, it's no surprise to the general public. You know, there are a lot of gaps. We are very, very blessed here in Canada to have access or universal access to healthcare. But really, it is restricted to, let's call it sick care. So the public system typically doesn't fund or have extensive programming on prevention. And really, as we kind of went through this, early diagnosis or early detection and prevention was by far the biggest gap that we've been seeing in the system. Most of the time when you go and see your family physician, you know, it's with a complaint or two, and often due to time restrictions, and often you can only come in with one complaint at a time. And the other big issue that we've been seeing in the healthcare system is it's obviously very heavily focused on treatment and intervention when it comes to surgery and medication. There is a particular slide that I'd love to quickly share with you guys that helps really put like a visual to what I'm talking about and how lifestyle medicine really kind of fits into the whole thing. You'll notice that the largest part of any kind of whole health treatment is lifestyle modifications. This really kind of ties into chronic disease reversal. And most chronic diseases can actually be avoided and or reversed through lifestyle modifications. So these are things like type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and even a lot of various cognitive diseases like Alzheimer's and more. Unfortunately, the system is very quick to jump at the surgery and prescription and say, well, these drugs are too expensive, or the wait times for surgery is too long. Whereas there's very little focus or discussion around what can I do as an empowered patient if I'm given the right information, the right analysis of my own makeup, whether that's my biochemistry, my blood work, my genetics, my physical assessments. You know, if someone were to be able to empower me with that data, there's a lot of macro advice out there. So there's a lot of information that's like meant for the general public. And for the most part, that works really well. But really, if you're looking to get the maximum results, you're going to personalize it and you have to fine tune it. And really, that's where Optimal You kind of comes in. So we front load our entire health journey with a comprehensive assessment. So the patients would come in, we do extensive blood work, we do genetic screening, we do at-home sleep study, we do a movement assessment, we do a VO2 for metabolic performance, and many more things. And this really helps give a solid snapshot of where you're currently at in your system. And then from there, our doctors review all the information, all the data, they put together a care plan. And everything that we do is based around the six pillars of lifestyle medicine. So it's really kind of broken out into a few key pillars, which include things like nutrition, physical exercise, stress management, restorative sleep, positive social connections. Many folks would be surprised to know that social connections and peer accountability has a huge part in terms of your overall well-being and your ability to kind of get out and be active. So we're all wired as social beings. So that's a big part of this as well.
Well, on that note, this is one of the reasons why selfishly I have the podcast, because I like chatting with people and I'm curious about people's stories. So I'm going to keep doing it because those social connections, I think, are really important. As you're chatting, Carl, it reminds me of, I remember I was on the treadmill at a gym I used to train at, and I saw fellow after fellow come in midlife, clearly hadn't worked out in a long time. And the trainer down this long hallway is getting them to do walking lunges with 25-pound dumbbells. And the guy's face was just so red. I thought, oh my gosh, like this is probably not the introduction that this guy needs. And you think about, has this guy got cleared from his doctor? So I'm thinking about in my circle, I've grown up in the business. So a lot of guys are in midlife right now. The typical story, you get married, you have kids, you run a business, your health and nutrition and exercise falls by the wayside. But I find a lot of people at that point get that clicking moment where they say, okay, I want to get back in shape. For a lot of people, I would imagine going to a place like yours, it can be motivating, but it could also be, hey, if I'm going in for this assessment, maybe I don't want to find out all the stuff that potentially is wrong in there. So how do you address that with people thinking, geez, if I go in to see these, what if they find something? And talking to me, I would like, well, yeah, I want to find it early if I can. But I know, because I have chats with a lot of people in my network, they're like, I'm not sure that I want to find out. So how do you kind of overcome that with people like that?
That's a great question. I mean, in some circumstances, sometimes ignorance is bliss. You know, like there's certain major world events that are going on that, quite frankly, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. Yet you're kind of filling your brain with all this global chaos that's going on, you know, it can keep you up at night, yet there's really nothing you can do about it. The good news is that when it comes to your own personal health journey, you can do something about it and you can actually have a material impact. One would even argue you have more influence on your own health journey than the healthcare system could ever have. You can really set your course in terms of what your future years look like. You can prevent a bunch of things. You can really just increase your energy level, increase your quality of life, increase your joy in terms of the things that you can experience and enjoy experiencing them. So we kind of have our tagline at Optimal You. It's really, we're helping people feel their best and be their best at the end of the day. So I would say when it comes to health journeys, I would strongly encourage people to believe that ignorance is not bliss. And a lot of the stuff, actually the large majority of things that we present to you when it comes to your genetic screening, your blood work, your care plan, are all easily actionable things. I love the picture that you painted where it's like a lot of people are going into this with a misconception that it's all or nothing, right? I'm going to have to hit the gym 2 hours a day. I'm going to have to like eat nothing but leafy greens. I'll never be able to have that glass of wine on a Friday night, you know, and it's like this doom and gloom. It's like, yeah, sure, I'll be healthy, but I'll be miserable, you know, and that's not the case at all. So when you actually start going through lifestyle medicine principles, it's all the small little things that add up that make a huge difference. I just recently had the results of my DEXA scan, which is something that we do include as part of our assessment as well, which looks at body composition and bone density. And, you know, there was a lot of good news in there for me. I have an athletic background, so I have a good amount of lean muscle and my bones are in good health. But let me tell you, that visceral fat score was eye-opening. I had no idea I was carrying a small child and fatty tissue around my organs. And I was just like, I mentioned a picture is worth 1,000 words, but like, let me tell you, I was a loss for words. And very quickly, having led most of my life pretty healthy, I'm fairly active. Similar to Al, I do a lot of cycling. I'm on the mountain biking trails every week. I do yoga every single day. And it just dawned on me that I was like, man, there's a lot more I can be doing. And when I started talking about my numbers with our physicians and they were just giving me some few tips, I was shocked in terms of how simple a lot of these things are. Like, it's just a lot of it is shifting more towards plant-based diet, obviously not eating late at night. And sure, you want to have that glass of wine, go ahead. But when you have that glass of wine is important. Regular physical exercise is more important than a all or nothing, run a marathon every Saturday. You know, so there's a lot of very small incremental things make a big difference. And for me, one of the biggest material differences was changing my sleep habits. And this is with some coaching and some insight. And honestly, some ongoing monitoring is one of the biggest pieces of insight. I've recently started wearing a smart ring through one of our partners that we brought in on Optimal You. And the amount of data and insights in terms of your sleep habits, your routine, and it's real-time feedback. So you wake up the next day and it's like, did you do this? Did you do that? Why don't you try this? So even though like when you become an Optimal You member, you do get these quarterly follow-ups with the physician. Part of the reason we wanted to bring in wearables as well as AI into the experience is for that daily, hourly feedback. One of the things I've recently piloted was a continuous blood glucose monitoring device through the same ecosystem as the ring. So it's all consolidated into one environment. And let me tell you, like, here I'm making my bagel for the morning, you know, have my bite. A few minutes later, my phone buzzes and says, like, what'd you do? You know, it was like, you know, I was like, whoa, okay, hold on. I said, can you please explain why you're experiencing a hyperglycemic event? And I was right away, you know, I said, well, I just had a bagel. And they said, okay, well, that's fine. 78% of people that eat that bagel will have a hyperglycemic event. And so it spikes your insulin. But, you know, it doesn't mean you can't have a bagel from time to time. It's just, here's what you can pair it with to reduce the glycemic index and to not spike your insulin levels and so you can process it properly. So the real-time education that you can get through tools now, through consumer wearable devices paired with AI now, which is honestly one of the craziest, most amazing things that's happened in the last few years, is the AI revolution. It's been fantastic and we want to incorporate that to everything we do. But then when you layer in the relational component with physicians that have the time for you, that care for you, that connect with you regularly, and that are having open and honest conversations with you about your health, your data, your lab work, you know, your habits, it can really, really make long-lasting changes. And ultimately, what we want to do is keep you out of that public healthcare system. It's great as an insurance policy, but ideally, you stay out of it as long as you can.
It's funny, you're speaking a little bit to the converted here because I know Robin has his ring and I have my little watch here. And we've both talked about the impact that those devices have had on both our sleep cycles or whatever you want to call them. So yeah, you're speaking to the converted. I do want to dive down a little bit into how you see the opportunities to integrate what you're doing into kind of the employee benefits plans. But before we get there, I got a couple of things. Number one, You just did a first on the show because I don't think we've ever had a visual pop up on our podcast before. So thank you for that. You're the first. You're a leader. You're an innovator. Second, though, obviously you're very passionate about this and you said you've been in this field for 25 years. Like, what drives you? Where did this passion come from?
Great question. For me, it's largely been, you know, when you're exposed to it a lot, you see patients, you see the gaps, you see the suffering, but you also see the successes. You know, in the pharma space, you kind of see a lot of innovative medicines that are brought to the table that can help people in crisis, which is great. At one point in my career, I was managing a business called National Home Doctor, which was a, believe it or not, a network of physicians that actually still did house calls. One of the most impactful things for me was on a monthly basis, I made it a habit of going out with our doctors on the road and visiting the patients in their home. And you really do see, you know, how challenging it could be, both from an access perspective of getting access to timely care. But a lot of these patients have a lot of comorbidities and a lot of chronic diseases. Given the right support, the right amount of information could very well reverse their situation. And again, referring specifically to things like chronic obesity, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, all of these things can be prevented and can be turned around. So, you know, I made a career out of connecting really smart people together. I make no claims. I'm by far not the smartest person in the room. And now that we have the ChatGPTs and the Gemini of the world, I would argue nobody is the smartest person in the room anymore. Access to infinite knowledge and wisdom is just at a click away now. But what I've always kind of really drove me is connecting really innovative, smart, well-designed products, services, and people and building ecosystems. One of the challenges in the healthcare system is the silos that we kind of live in. It's amazing to me that still in this day and age of technology, you know, in Ontario specifically, various hospitals, various clinics, nothing talks to each other. It's completely siloed. So one of the things that we want to do at Optimal U, and this may be preempting one of your questions about how we integrate with the public system, is that we want to bring in all the diagnostic tools, so called consumer wearables, to blood work, to genetic screening, and pull that all in into one story. And then we want to keep the family physician looped in, right? We don't want to become the exclusive one-stop shop. I don't believe healthcare should be a one-stop shop, but we also want to be the oil that greases the wheel between all the different players in the space. We're not going to become a state-of-the-art cardiac center where we're performing triple bypasses and things like that, but we want to have really, really good relationships with those that do. One of the things I've realized as a gap in the system is the referral process. As I built relationships with various specialists and all the top academic centers, one of the things that kind of blew me away is I was asking, like, why are these wait times so long? And, you know, I was speaking to a good friend of mine who actually happened to be the spine surgeon that did my back fusion back when I hurt myself in my early 30s. And he said, well, look, come with me, Carl, let me show you something. And he showed me this referral form that he received from one of the family physicians that sent a patient in. And it was this white blank sheet patient name that he was blocking, you know, made sure that was confidential. But right in the middle, some chicken scratch handwriting that just said lower back pain. That was it. And so what do you think is going to happen to that referral? You know, you're sending that in to a top academic surgeon that's like one of the top spine specialists in the country. It goes to the bottom of the pile, right? So part of the issue is, as he mentioned it, was saying the patients are not being properly worked up. And that means the right screening tools, the right diagnostics, the right counseling hasn't been put into place. The right history isn't being provided. And so for us, we want to make sure that if and when we have to actually leverage the public system and put patients into the hands of a specialist or one of those intervention clinics, we want to make sure our patients are properly worked up. And a part of that is doing our part, working with the family physician, and then making sure that those are high quality referrals that are going in. And we believe that that's going to be one of the ways that patients will get prioritized and triaged appropriately. And it will really, really avoid a lot of the back and forth, which can, as you guys probably already know, like lead to a lot of delays.
So Carl, can you maybe talk a little bit about how companies can integrate lifestyle medicine into their day-to-day benefit plans? And specifically, what kind of measurable outcomes could they expect to see? Because that's what, at the end of the day, people are going to say, well, this is great. I'm providing something else for our employees and our team, but what do we get back?
You're touching on one of my favorite topics. I worked in patient reimbursement for about 8 years in the specialty pharmaceutical space. So this was working with insurance providers to try to help get coverage for expensive medications for patients that were in dire need. And so lifestyle medicine, one of the things that I love is it could be the most cost-effective thing that you could ever do to change your health journey. It's just a little bit of willpower, some education, and some accountability. So when we're working with private insurance companies that are ultimately adjudicators for employers, what employers ultimately want is they want their employees feeling their best and being at their best. And there is no better way to do that than keeping them healthy, keeping their energies high, and helping them love life. And if those employees at the end of the day are enjoying their lives, are full of energy, are able to enjoy their time with their kids, their family, they're going to come to work at the best version of themselves. And one of the natural side effects of that is also reducing drug costs of the plan, right? So if you can avoid type 2 diabetes, which is one of the most costly things that you could possibly have on a drug plan, is having to manage diabetes, cardiovascular disease. And the other one is short-term disability. Many folks have to take time off work to deal with their health crisis situation. So it's a much better investment from an employer perspective to keep their employees healthy as opposed to dealing with crisis at the end of the day. Increase productivity, increase the quality of work, reduce absenteeism, and reduce overall drug costs. So it makes a ton of sense. The way that we've structured it is there's our annual health assessment, which is the bulk of the cost of the program, largely because we ourselves have to pay for the genetic testing and the comprehensive blood work and that whole assessment. But then after that, once you become an Optimal You member, it's essentially ongoing monitoring and counseling, which is really just a small part of the overall cost of these private services.
And to date, like what kind of, I guess, do you have any success stories that you can share where you've seen this actually at play?
In terms of employer benefits?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, before going out and building Optimal You with some of my closest friends, I've worked in large corporations. I've worked at McKesson, GSK, Life Labs, a number of large corporations that do have, luckily enough, the funds to help provide some private insurance, which is, again, largely drug access. And they do have some programming. And again, at the executive level, many employers offer executive health through private clinics and things like that. Again, it really is a blessing to be able to get access to stuff like that. At Optimal You, what we're trying to do, we are a new clinic. This is our first year in operation. So, what we're currently offering in the marketplace is our top level premier services. So we're kind of throwing everything in the kitchen sink, everything that's been scientifically validated to our clients. Clients that are wanting the best of the best. That's what we're offering today. But our long-term vision as we scale is we want to create a much lower price entry points for clients. Our dream would be that lifestyle medicine is completely accessible and funded, whether it's through private pay or through employer benefits. If the government could get things put together properly, even offer some public services. But like I said, our doctors, a lot of them do public speaking today. They do public engagements, provide high-level advice, different things like group sessions, webinars. And what we're really doing is offering that personalized, tailored advice that kind of comes in by going through our assessments.
Well, Carl, we're talking about lifestyle medicine. That term is coming up over and over again. And I think the three of us sitting here realize that's a recognized specialty. And we were talking about that before we started recording today. But not everybody listening to this is aware of that. So how do you differentiate Optimal You from some of the more generic programs that we see out there?
Yeah, great question. So with lifestyle medicine, it's funny, when we first opened up, we started doing a lot of Google research and finding out what people are looking for and looking at and things like that. And a lot of people are looking for alternatives to the traditional public or conventional medicine. The best way to describe lifestyle medicine, a lot of people know about functional medicine as an option. I would say where the similarities are between lifestyle and function is it's heavy on the diagnostics upfront. So a lot of upfront testing. You can only offer personalized advice if you actually know the person's details, right? So a lot of upfront testing. Where we kind of split is on the functional medicine side is they are pretty quick on offering things like supplementation or other types of, I wouldn't say invasive, but like minimally invasive treatments. Lifestyle medicine, as I kind of showed in the pyramid, is we're kind of flipping the paradigm. You start with things the patient can do themselves, right? So let's dial in based on the six pillars, your nutrition, your physical activity, all the stress management, your sleep habits, the avoidance of risky substances that are all contributing to negative health outcomes. This is where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck, right? Is really making those lifestyle changes. And our team is prepared to help track along with you, monitor your success through regular blood work, DEXA scans, wearables, just to track your success and to keep tweaking your care plan. I'll just give you one little personalized tidbit. We kind of all have our little coffee mugs here and caffeine. And caffeine is one of the most consumed, let's call it a drug, out in the marketplace. And when I found out that through our genetic test that we do, which has, you know, looks at a number of things, one of the key outcomes was looking at whether you're a high metabolizer or a low metabolizer of caffeine. I never even heard of this before. But for me, you know, right away I perked up. Because I was like, every morning I have my coffee. Like, that is my routine. I have my latte. I'll do my exercise first thing in the morning. And that's my routine. And one of the differences between high metabolizers and low metabolizers is that if you're a low metabolizer of caffeine, you should not be having any more than 200 milligrams of caffeine per day, which is essentially a cup of coffee. Anything more than that significantly increases your risk of a cardiac event. And I was floored. I had no idea, right? Whereas there's a lot of caffeine studies out there that talk about different things. But once the studies started splitting out those cohorts in terms of low metabolizer, high metabolizer, being in the high metabolizer category, you can have a lot more coffee, first of all, with very minimal negative side effects. Actually, there's a lot of protective effects of coffee for the high metabolizer category. So as I went in, I did my cheek swab and got ready for my genetic. I was like praying. I was like, please let me be a high metabolizer. And I am pleased to announce that, yes, I am. So it was one of the things that kind of came out of there. But that's just one of many, many examples of personalized medicine. So when you actually get into the nuances at an individual level, not all advice applies to everybody, right? And that's the thing. You hear these whole arguments about, oh, should I do a plant-based focused weight loss routine, or people are talking about Atkins and carnivore diets and all this kind of stuff. When you really break it down at the genetic level, high protein and carnivore diets may be great for some people, and they'll swear by it. They say, I lost all this weight and I put on all this lean muscle. But other people, like, that would be a death sentence in terms of people that are at a genetic risk of having elevated LDL and lower HDL. I'm one of those people, unfortunately, because I do like my occasional meat from time to time. However, if I went on a pure carnivore diet, I would literally completely jack up all my cholesterol levels inadvertently. So for me personally, the plant-based weight loss program is the way to go. So again, data insights really helps tailor and create those customized plans.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And I want to talk more about that in a second. But one of the things I was going to comment on is earlier when you brought up the slide, and I love the concept, and I think more people are going to be glad to hear this, that there are lifestyle changes that you can make. Earlier in the podcast, you had said you're not going to be having any fun because you're just going to be eating leafy greens and basically water at every meal, and that's no fun. But it doesn't have to be like that.
Exactly.
And, you know, I use the example, and it's something that someone else brought to me, so it's not my idea, but I've incorporated it into my life. And yes, I love wearing a wearable. I actually wear the Oura Ring. To your point, I can see the effect of day to day, oh, I had that. That affected my sleep by this. You can actually see it in real time. So I think it's really useful. And I'm really excited to see firms like yours, how they incorporate that into monitoring ongoing health, because for someone like me, I'm very interested in that. But one of the things I started doing, Carl, is I don't drink during the week. I don't have any alcohol during the week because that's my work time. I'm not going to do that. But on a Friday night, especially after recording 4 podcasts in a row,
yep,
I do enjoy having that glass of wine with my wife on a Friday evening or two. But one of the things that I've incorporated in that, because I do watch what I eat, especially during the week, I will hop on the treadmill and I will do 40 minutes of steady state cardio so that I earn that glass or two or one.
Right.
And that way I'm not feeling guilty about that. So that's a clue someone gave to me, and hopefully someone else can benefit from that. But I do want to go back to being a high metabolizer of coffee and that test that you're talking about, because I think that's great to know. And when I do that test, I hope I'm the same, because I do love my coffee.
Yeah. Going back to your ignorance is bliss, Robin. That might be one of those things where I don't want to know.
That might be one. Maybe we just leave the coffee one out of that.
Yeah.
But the point that I wanted to make on that, Carl, was that test, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that test will also identify, and this is where I think it's very, very useful. If a doctor is going to prescribe a drug, and we've all heard this story, oh, that drug wasn't working, that drug wasn't good for me, this drug, And that test identifies, here's the drugs that work well for you. Here's ones maybe that don't work so well for you. Does that test incorporate that as well?
So two versions of that test.
Okay.
So the one I was referring to is nutrigenomics. So this particular test focuses on nutrients, metabolism, you know, prone to injury. Are you predisposed to low circulating vitamin A, vitamin D, like things like that? And for me, again, this showcased that, you know, it's very easy for me to put on muscle, but I'm also prone to soft tissue injury, which again, kind of changes the type of exercise that I do. But to your point, I believe you're referring to like a pharmacogenomics, which is more about trying to predict how you're going to respond to various medications. That test is also really, really important. Yes, we do have access to that. This is something that we can give our patients as an optional additional test if they need to. Obviously, if you're not on chronic medication or it's no sense of doing it, I mean, the turnaround time on those tests are pretty quick. So if you're contemplating or you're getting some medical advice that you may need to start going on certain treatments, it's always a good idea. Like, I think information is always great. So those pharmacogenetic tests are great. And I would also say, especially from an employer payer perspective, there's a huge value proposition there about not wasting insurance money on medication that at the end of the day is really not doing anything. Having spent some time in the reimbursement space, there's a really weird paradigm when it comes to public payer drug reimbursement, where they have to follow a certain sequence of medications. And sometimes starting on one thing may preclude you from trying another thing. So anything that will allow you to get that information ahead of time before starting a treatment is always helpful.
Carl, you touched on this a little bit before, but I'd love to dive down a little bit deeper. You talked about how you interface, you work with the public care system, and you're not trying to bypass it. But can you talk a little bit more about from the diagnostics stage and then into, you know, maybe you're going back into the public care system. How do you help patients navigate that crossover or navigate once they're back into the public care system? How do you go about doing that to enhance their experience?
It's a great question. So one of the services that we're really excited about is the care coordination component to it. So as part of our membership service, care coordination is an important bit. So although we're focused very, very heavily on the prevention and early screening side of things, God forbid, let's say we do find something, right? We want to make sure first and foremost that the family physician is looped in, that they're aware that, you know, we've stumbled over something that requires additional attention. So we will coordinate directly with the family physician and provide any kind of immediate advice that way. Ultimately, though, again, if it requires a specialist referral, the best thing we can do is make sure that we help with the workup, right? So can we provide the test results? Can we provide the physician notes? Can we provide the entire story, wrap it up in a bow, and give that to the family physician so they're now armed with all the information that they need to make that effective and high-quality referral to the specialist? Again, we're not in the business of replacing family physicians. We want to work with them. The gap that we are trying to fill is that whole big prevention gap and the lifestyle side.
Have you ever seen any pushback from a patient that comes to you, gets a diagnosis, they go back to talk to their family physician, you do exactly what you just said, give them lots of data, lots of support, and there's pushback from the family physician? Why are you dealing with this group? Why didn't you come to me? Have you seen that? And if so, how do you deal with it? Or how do you get the patient to respond?
Yeah, that's a very interesting paradigm. And unfortunately, there is some challenges, particularly in Ontario, even just the way that the codes work. We're currently in a system that has a negation process in it, meaning that if you're rostered as part of a family health team or a family health environment where they receive a rostering fee, there is a negation if you go outside of that system. So in my experience, most of that pushback is more about financial pushback. Because if they go elsewhere and they're swiping OHIP cards, ultimately that will financially impact the family physician that's in charge of your overall care. Luckily, I've kind of been hearing some things that that's currently under review and that they're looking at making some changes along those lines in order to help foster more of a collaborative working environment. But in the short term, the good news is we don't bill OHIP.
Right.
So, you know, everything that we're doing falls outside of the OHIP schedule. So our services will not lead to any negation on the part of the family physician. So we kind of do see it as us doing our due diligence in terms of continuity of care and ensuring that we're always available to answer questions. You know, we don't want to just punt it to the family doctor. We've noticed a lot of private clinics tend to do that, where they would essentially identify a problem and punt it, right? Now it becomes the family doctor's problem. What we're hoping to do is put as much of the information together as possible, do as much of the administration and the legwork as much as possible, and essentially have everything prepared in advance so that by the time it goes to the family physician, it's a quick review and they're able to kind of help triage it and move it on if it requires a specialty consult afterwards.
Well, Carl, you've kind of been answering this the whole way through the episode, but as you know, Al does have a signature question that we always wrap up each episode with. Who knows? You might have something else to tell us as well. But so if Al, you're ready, I'll let you take it away.
Yeah. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So we've talked a lot today about Optimal You and the healthcare landscape. Can you talk about any proverbial trees you might be planting in that area? Or maybe there's something that you want to talk about on the personal side where, again, you're planting some of those proverbial trees for the future.
I love that. And look, thanks, Al, for that question. It's kind of teed up in an easy space being in healthcare. The time and the effort and the resources that you put in as early as possible in your own health journey is going to create those long-term healthy trees down the road. I mean, there's no bad time to start, but there is a better time to start. And that better time is today. So the earlier you plant that seed, the earlier you start your journey, whether you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, it doesn't matter. My advice to you would be start now, and that seed will eventually grow into the best version of your health self down the road. What we're trying to do as an organization is bring as many of the validated, scientifically sound tools to the table to help you on your journey. And ultimately, we do see ourselves as a bit of a disruptor in the marketplace. We're hoping that it creates change. We welcome many more people that want to do similar things that ultimately will lead to better health outcomes, will reduce the overall cost burden to the public healthcare system for Canadians, and ultimately will help us be the best versions of ourselves. So the health journey is a long one. Just like watching a tree grow, things take time, but you got to water it daily. You got to give it some love and some attention. And there is no better person that is worth it than you. Hence, Optimal You.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, it's funny. Health is one of those things where you don't really appreciate it until you don't have it. And it's never top of mind, or quite often not top of mind, until something goes wrong. And then it's very top of mind. But you've shared a lot of great information, a lot of great ideas with us today. So appreciate that.
Yeah, Carl, I'm so happy we're able to do this, because from that first conversation, you and I hit it off. We've had some great conversations along with your business partner, Mark. So please say hello to him for us as well. For listeners who are interested in learning more about what you're doing at Optimal You, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Absolutely. Yeah. The easiest way is just go to our website. It's optimalu.ca. And that's U as in the letter U. We're updating as regularly as possible. One of the best things about the websites is you can actually quickly meet our doctors through their video bios. So we get to see our wonderful physicians. That really, that's where the magic happens, is our doctors are super, super passionate about what they do. Hear their stories, watch their videos, let them talk about what they're passionate about, which is preventative health. And like I said, we're in the healthcare relationship business, and we would love to meet you when you're ready.
All right. Well, that does it for today's episode. I think you can tell Al and I really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al and myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. We saw it here today. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time.